Good afternoon. You're listening to On Blast with the Philadelphia Student Union on WPEB 88.1 FM. We're your hosts for today's show. I'm Khalif Dobson.
And I'm Sylvia Wright. The Student Union is a youth-led organization. We are a group of young people from Philadelphia public schools making changes in the school system, doing political education and leadership development.
On Blast is the only youth-led and youth-produced radio show in Philadelphia. That means that students do the interviews, edit, and produce segment, and we host the show. We are using media as a tool to organize and liberate young people.
You can tune in to On Blast every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. on 88.1 FM WPEB. Or you can also listen to the show online by going to our podcast at onblast.podomatic.com. While you are there, you can also subscribe to our podcast and have new shows sent directly to your iTunes.
Today, we'll hear a roundtable discussion about the military and using new methods to recruit young people.
We'll listen to an interview with Omeka, a hip-hop artist and activist from California.
And we'll learn about parents who are fighting to get more translators for Philadelphia public schools. Plus, we'll have music and other news.
Now Simone Waller brings us a discussion about the military's new clothing line that is meant to target young people.
The U.S. Army is collaborating with Sears on a clothing line that will be sold at Sears stores all across the country. The Army sold their camouflage patterns and the first entry insignia to Sears, and the clothing line will be appearing in Fashion Week this year, which will mark the first time that Sears or the U.S. Army has ever appeared in this high fashion event. I asked a few Philadelphia Student Union members if they thought that the Army was being strategic by going with Sears, and what they thought the Army's purpose was. But first, they talked about how they felt about the line in general.
My name is Candace, and I go to Sayre.
My name is Azeem, and I go to West Auto.
And my name is Eric, and I go to West Auto.
My name is Shakira, and I go to Kappa.
I feel like it's preparing people to be familiar with Army fatigue. It's preparing people to be, like, really close with seeing people dressed up, like, ready for war. And that's not right, because not a lot of people want war.
I feel similar, because it's like, I think our government knows this is, like, a never-ending war because of how far it's gone. So it's, like, it's two sides to it. It's, like, one is they're putting the clothing line out so that they can, like, dress up our nation, like, as the fighters, so that they can go to war, because they know they keep sending people there, people keep dying, they need more. Then another way is they're just doing it to get money, and I think that's very rude of them when we have people out there fighting, because my father is in Iraq right now, and they're coming out with a clothing line. That is unnecessary. I think it's very disrespectful.
I mean, I feel the same way, and I feel like it's, you know, needless to be, repetitive, in that the clothing lines are not subliminal, but, like, definitely messaging, and I feel the same way. You know, it's just, like, making the Army look cool and stylish, and, you know, finding another way to, like, recruit to young people, especially the working class, and not only the clothing line, but other things such as, you know, video games, which, you know, some Army games are, you know, considered like training ground, you know, for that person that just doesn't have a job, you know, and it's just like, you know, oh, I'm gonna play this Army game at the same time I'm being trained to fight in a war.
Yeah, I think it's just like, I mean, it's too much, like putting all that, just like the message into, like, popular culture and, like, fashion is just, like, stupid and pointless. But a lot of these clothing lines are targeted toward, like, working class, like, people and kids. So it's stupid.
Another thing I think is very, very funny about this is how the prices of the clothes that they have are, like, really high. Like, stuff that you would buy from, like, Abercrombie & Fitch or something. They think it's really going to sell that much, and it probably will, which will probably, like, affect most people. But then, like, I think about, like, what are they going to do with the money? Are they going to use it to, like, continue their little clothing legacy that they want to have, or are they going to, like, use it for a good cause?
Then that's not fair, because they already take our money. So why put out a clothing line to take more of our money?
Maybe the, I don't know, maybe the meaning of this clothing line is like to show patriotism or something.
I mean, it can be looked at that way, but you know, like for every generation, music along with fashion defines it, you know, like the 80s with the afros and bell bottoms and, you know, I mean the 70s and 80s with their thing, and like now with, you know, any kind of style out, like, you know, oh, polka dots are the new thing or stripes is the new thing. Like, it is bad, of course, you know, that's needless to say, but to say it's unnecessary and not smart, I think it is, you know, kind of smart that the Army is, utilizing that, you know, just like stripes could be in. Army fatigue is like, oh, that's the new thing, everybody should wear it, you know?
Yeah,
they're taking smart. That train and, you know, riding with it. So I don't think, it might not be exactly patriotism, but it's kind of like, Army fatigue is the new thing, everybody's wearing it, and it just so happens that it'll make you think about joining the war.
Yeah, like if this thing does pop, if it does become like a good clothing line or whatever, and like don't you know you have pictures of like past history or whatever, so in the future they look at this and like the army fatigue and stuff could define this little section in history, how it was just war.
I think like in a sense it could be offensive to other people, like people who are like immigrants from Iraq, if somebody's walking around and they have like one of these shirts on, it's kind of showing like that, you know, it's just awkward and it's
I don't think we should boycott it. I think we should let it slide because like I think that even if we would try to boycott it that it wouldn't be effective. For some reason I just think it would not work. But if we like would boycott it, like what will we be stopping? Like what is the harm in the clothing line, even though it's not necessary? Like, even though they're having people, like, think about joining the war, I don't think it's, like, I don't know. I don't think it's necessary to boycott it, but I don't think it's necessary for a clothing line to be out either.
I mean, and it kind of might be one of those little, like, thoughts where ignorance is bliss, where it's kind of like, understanding the subliminal message does nothing good for you, you know, because like it won't do any good boycotting it at all, you know, having campaigns, oh, army fatigue at Sears is subliminal messaging. You know, there are people out that are going to be like, what? Nothing can change my mind about anything. I don't really like, that's not putting any thoughts in my head. How do you know what I'm thinking? You know, people will think like this. So it wouldn't really like make that much sense to boycott it. But at the same time, we know and it's effed up. But it won't do anything about it. The fact that we know.
I understand, like there's no harm in their subliminal messaging, but the real harm is that when people go to war, many of them die. That's why they're trying to get more people to join the army, and that's why they're attacking the working class. Like, join the army. Like, we need you. They need y'all to be there, to die for them, because they have nobody else. That's the harm.
Yeah, like, it's definitely harm in it, but, like, with us knowing that that's what's happening, what's it gonna change? We just know. It's just the less, like, the less of us that know and the more of them that don't, kind of, like, not benefiting us to know it.
Who do you think that they're targeting with this?
The working class.
I think they're targeting, like, people who don't, you know much, because wearing that is kind of saying you're just a foot soldier, you know, you're just somebody's yes man.
They're targeting the working class. They're targeting the people who don't have that much money, who aren't like, who can't really get jobs but are trying to get jobs and aren't like, they don't have any money coming in. They're targeting them people.
I think they're targeting like mostly everybody, like the upper class. They might just buy it to wear it. Like they probably think about like the true meaning of it, like what we're doing now. They probably like have a little thought in their head, but like the working class, lower class people, I think it will, like, it's, they're, like, coming to them, too, because, like, it affects them. They don't have any money, so they want to, like, join this so that they can have money, so they wear it to support it, and, like, and then when you, like, when you see people wearing stuff, like, everybody, like, wear one type of clothing or whatever, and then you start to want it because it's really popular, you want to buy it, so that might attract people, too, like, if they really... If they get people buying it, then other people see it, it can start a big thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's definitely targeting the urban community, you know, people that can't afford college anyway. So it's kind of like, you know, this is your future anyway, but oh, look, that new state property is Army Fatigue. You look good in it anyway.
Yeah. Like, even if you don't have money, you still want it because it's calling you. Like, and then when you see other people with it, it's like you feel like you need it. So you go get
it. Was a strategic move to go to Sears because there's no Army Fatigue in Urban Outfitters or American Apparel or Abercrombie or Old Navy. Like, it's specifically in stores where the working class and urban communities can afford.
Oh, I kind of think that they chose Sears because Sears is cheaper. Like, they sell their clothes for cheaper. And, like, I think it probably would have been smarter to do it, like, Former Mills or something because it's even cheaper there. But I really don't know their technical reason for choosing Sears.
Just go. I'm sorry. You know what it says about, like, them? It's saying that, like, people of our, like, class are just meant to be foot soldiers. We're not meant to be generals and such.
I think they chose Sears because, like she was saying, how she thought they should have put it in Foreman Mills because it was cheaper. I think they have it in Sears because both lower class and upper class, like, will both go there. So it's attracting both instead of just one.
I mean, and it definitely is in Foreman Mills, too. And even if it's not the exact Army Fatigue, like, you know, the same Army color and everything in the Army Fatigue design, there's a lot of, like, new apparel with the, like, the Army structured design. Like, a lot of the diesel jackets and, you know, like, yeah, the jackets that everybody are wearing now with, like, the buttons on the side, like, right, yeah, on the shoulder. And, like, all that new fit is all military anyway.
I think they sort of tried to do it a while ago because I remember, maybe 2 years back, people were wearing Army Fatigue. But I think they're bringing it back more because they don't have many people going into war. They're pulling people who, like, are already out back in. Like, my dad, he was out of the Army for good, and they pulled him back in 2 more years to go to Iraq. So it's like they're pulling old people back. They need new people, so they're trying to attract the younger community. They're trying to get more people instead of, like, recruiting the old people that they already had.
Yeah, like, off of what she was saying, it's kind of like they're trying to fit in with the younger crowd, and it's kind of creepy, you know?
Yeah, but that style is kind of like in all types of classes, but in different ways. Like, you know, the fit of an Army jacket might be, like, a good-looking style, so it's in the boutiques, and it's in the other classes, like, ranking where they buy things. It's in Urban Outfitters. It's in the diesel, like, thing. The only thing is, you wouldn't really pay attention to it because it doesn't have that Army Fatigue design. Whereas Foreman Mills and Sears and State Property will, like, they won't, like, care about how good the fit of an Army Fatigue, in, like, an Army, like, a military-style jacket is. They just have that design there.
Nobody ever would have thought that, like, the stuff that they wear in the Army will actually be fashionable because the stuff that they wear in the Army, they did something to make it hot. I don't, like, something. Like, one person started it, just started, like, a whole little trend because people are wearing, like, the pants with all the pockets on them and the big jackets that's all heavy with pockets and Army Fatigue and all that other stuff.
I think it got a lot to do with a lot of the video games, like, a lot of young people who, like, are impoverished or who are living in these type of neighborhoods, like, they play video games with people wearing Army Fatigue clothes. Like they play a lot of video games that get them ready for the Army. And then they see a lot of people, that's hot, like, I want it. So I guess the Army notices it. So they're just attacking it. Like, you want to wear Army Fatigue? We're going to give you Army Fatigue.
This is a production of Simone Waller, and this is On Blast.
Stay tuned for more On Blast after this short music break. We'll be right back.
We just heard a piece about military recruitment strategies. Now let's get some news about a policy that is being newly enforced by Superintendent Arlene Ackerman.
This week, the school district sent a letter home with students saying that they were going to begin strict enforcement at the district's zero tolerance policy. Dr. Arlene Ackerman sent out two letters, one targeted toward students and one targeted toward their parents, that state that any student who commits violence of any kind in their school, on the property of their school, or during any school-sanctioned activity will be suspended for 10 days with intent to expel, transferred to an alternative school, and eventually prohibited from attending any district school. The letters also stated the district and city goals for doubling college attendance rate.
The Philadelphia Inquirer also reported that Ackerman plans to create a safety cabinet to meet with her regularly to assign a dedicated school safety staffer in every building and, quote, revamp, end quote, the process of dealing with student offenders. There are some grave contradictions in this announcement. It does not make sense to say that you are going to be kicking students out of school at the same time as you say that you want to encourage more students to graduate and go to college. This new renewed commitment to stricter disciplinary enforcement is really a cop-out by the district. They are trying to blame their own failures on students and think that by kicking students out of school, they are magically going to begin improving. How can the district vow to put school safety staffers in every school when they refuse to adequately staff schools with counselors and new teacher coaches, when most schools don't have the resources they need to be successful? The district needs to invest in students, not in having them kicked out of school.
Up next, a story produced by Eric Yates. It's an interview with Omeka, who is a hip-hop artist and activist. This piece was recorded when PSU members traveled down to Immokalee, Florida to attend the Student Farm Worker Alliance Conference.
My name is Omeka. I'm from Los Angeles. What I do is it's what's considered hip-hop. It's underground hip-hop from Los Angeles. And mainly the reason why I do it is, one, for the obvious love for the art and the culture, and also using hip-hop as a vehicle, actually for what it was actually intended for, you know, in the first place, which is get the message of the people in the communities, especially in the hood, out there to the public.
Can you say where you're from and what's going on in your neighborhood?
I'm from Los Angeles, specifically East LA. Some of the issues that are happening out there is the obvious problem of gentrification that's existing all over the U.S. You know, every single community of color in the United States that's of low income is going through this issue of gentrification, right? They first start by saying that it's a beautification process in the community, but obviously, as we know, the building of new structures and different companies coming in, franchises and corporations, become less accessible to the communities, being forced to leave, right? The people and families. That's the obvious one. That's the one thing that's blatant. It's out there physical. You can see it being constructed. The other one is this issue of colonization, right? And trying to decipher what that is for our communities. In other words, our own people feeling powerless in here in the United States of America, feeling like they don't have any control or any power of what can happen to their lives or how they can determine their own future. And so this comes through a systematic approach, through the educational system. It happens through the type of jobs that they're able to get or that we're able to get, the type of billboards that are put out on the street and what it says, the fact that most ghettos, most neighborhoods have more liquor stores than they have health stores, the fact that stores like Food for Less exist in our communities, which is like the last resource that you ever want to go to get food because they get everything at the last minute. They get what the leftovers of every other store, right? Every other grocery store. What the rich don't want, we get. So those are the battles, those are the constant fights, right? We can paint this whole thing in a global perspective and talk about capitalism and neoliberalism and things like that, but we can't really approach that until we really look inside our communities and get a perspective from there first.
Is that what you use to help influence your music and your lyrics?
Yeah, definitely. I come from a perspective of first it was as a victim, you know, as somebody who's been going through those things, right? My family being immigrants from Mexico, me having to cross the border, me not learning how to speak English until I was, you know, like in middle school, feeling like a sense of not belonging. And you first get angry, you get pissed off. You go like, why is this stuff happening? How come my mom is working 12 hours a day, my dad working 13 hours a day, and we still can't even make rent? But my dad complains to us about the type of works that he has to get and the type of treatment that he gets, but he never says anything at work. So you begin to question those things. Then you look to your right, and then you find the same story. You look to the left, and you see the same story. And those people look like you, and some are in the black community. It could be in South Central, which is where I used to live, or it could be in East LA, where it's predominantly Raza. But it's the same story. And so from there, you ask yourself two different questions. Like, one is, what do I have to do to not be in this? Do I have to sell drugs? If I need to do that, I'll go do that. If I need to go to school and call myself Hispanic or Mexican-American, whatever they want to call me, I'll call myself that, just so I can get out of that rut. The second line of questioning is, why are these things happening? How come they're in this situation, I'm in this situation, and what is it that we have to do to eradicate that? I think a lot of us that are here today are asking the second question, not really concerning ourselves with what they call us, but what we call ourselves, and knowing what it is that we have to do. So I come from that perspective, like participant in the struggle because I'm forced to.
And like a follow-up to that, like I feel like a lot of artists are so disconnected from any of the stuff that you just said, or even if they come from that, my experience has been that they are trying to do something else. Like, can you say like what it is, like how it's been for you to connect your art to the struggle, and like specifically around the CIW? Like, they just are brilliant around like using art and our culture to get people animated.
Yeah, I think, for one, other artists, you know, are also in the grind, you know. Some of the people that get signed to major labels is no different than somebody working at Bank of America. They're just trying to live. The unfortunate part about that is that they're being manipulated and used as a vehicle to maintain a certain level of ignorance in our communities, used as entertainment, pumping this kind of idea of getting material things is the way in which you can level out who's doing good in this society and who's not. So it's almost like we need some sort of assurance that we're doing good. And so a lot of these folks, unfortunately, and I feel bad for them, that they're in that situation. As tough as they may seem, as rich as they may seem, for some of us that have been in the industry for a while and understand the music industry, we know that they're not that hard, and we know that they're not that rich. And I feel bad for them. And in the end of all, they're not the enemy. Definitely, you could, you know, check them fools, you know, once in a while. And not only that, but their sexism too, and attack it from that level, from somebody like, look brother, I know what you're trying to do, I know why you're trying to do it, but that's not the way to go about it, you know. And you're making more people upset in your own community by you trying to keep this kind of image of being rich, you know. So yeah, so I go about it at that level. The other thing about this, in other words, the work that I do and how I maintain connected is, I just see myself as somebody who's also in that struggle. And from that point, all I got to do then is just look around and see who else is doing the work, and work that I'm able to relate to on a personal level, cultural and traditional level, but also on a political level. And so there's a lot of struggles out there. There's people fighting from all, but some are too reformist. Some are looking into the system to acquire resources for our community. Some of us don't believe in that. I don't believe that it's beneficial for us to go ask the government for anything, or the system in general. The system saying we're trying to fix the system. We ain't trying to fix anything. The system isn't broken. The system is working just fine. It just isn't made for our benefit. And so from that end, as radical as it may sound, it's just, I think it's more realistic for us to be able to create our own resources and create our own fights and struggles, our own community spaces, our own music, our own interviews, our own radio stations, our own education, in order for us to really be free.
I was wondering, like, with the work that you do at the CIW, how the CIW has been able to, like, create fundamental systematic change and, like, real tangible things for workers here, like, how that fits into, like, what you were just saying about your politics and your art.
I think the CIW has a different way, a new way of doing politics, very much like the Zapatista approach in Mexico, exercising power that already exists within the people. And old movements, let's talk about the 60s and the civil rights movements, as beautiful as it was, we were asking for acceptance, we're asking to be part of something. Today, we're not asking to be part of something. We're claiming it, and we're stating, this is what belongs to us, and this is how I'm going to get it. The CIW does that in such a beautiful way, in that in terms of reaching out to, let's say, politicians, it's a very beautiful strategy, because they're not asking. If we're going to go through this democratic process of voting for people, those fools got to serve us. I mean, they're there because of us. And so what we're doing is exercising that power, saying like, we're not asking you for this is what we demand. And if we don't get that, we're gonna go ahead and get it ourselves. And so they've done this repeatedly over and over. And actually, politicians and governmental agencies have come to them to see how they can support. And that's the beautiful thing. That's the aspect of creating and participating and practicing your own power.
The last piece we heard was an interview with Omeka, a hip-hop artist and activist, speaking on a conference he went to in Immokalee, Florida. Now it's time to talk about what's going on in the news.
The current economic crisis is not only affecting the budgets of individuals and families, but also those of government agencies such as the school district. School districts across the country are now facing budget cuts. There are three main causes of these budget cuts. First, many school districts have large sums of money invested in stocks. Recent economic turmoil has caused these assets to drop tremendously in value. Second, many school districts have large parts of their budget funded by property taxes. A large slew of home foreclosures and falling property values have reduced the amount of money that can be collected by these taxes. Finally, many districts get the money from their budgets in large sums, perhaps once or twice a year.
Districts often took out short-term loans to fund the earlier portions of their budgets, but now banks are making districts pay increasing rates. The combined effect of these reductions can result in large budget cuts. This has forced many districts to hold back on teacher salary increases, reduce spending on resources, and delay construction projects. These are all taking a toll on our country's students. The irony in all this is that a strong education system helps promote a strong economy, yet as the economy falters, schools are falling by the wayside.
Now we're going to have a report back from Amber Marie Felton about the Student Summit.
On October 30th, the Philadelphia Student Union held a student summit. We brought together almost 200 students from a number of high schools across the city and the region. We ran workshops throughout the day, and the event was a huge success. As a part of the summit, students produced statements on different issues in education in the region. Student Union is going to refine the statements, but here they are as they came out of the summit. School funding. The problem with school funding in Pennsylvania is that it is area-based. Schools that are struggling get money taken away, while schools that are already doing well get more funds. And the money that we have is not distributed equally. The solution to this problem is to provide Pennsylvania with a budget that is based more on need than location. Corrective Action 2. Right now, about a third of Philly's public schools are in Corrective Action 2. We feel that there are too many reasons for this. One is that schools are not provided with the resources they need. Another is that schools that are struggling do not get reforms that work. Overcrowded classrooms, lack of supplies, lack of qualified teachers, counselors, and other staff create difficult situations for the whole school community. From this emerges violence, a high dropout rate, and an oppressive environment that is more like a prison than a school. All of this makes students hate learning. When schools are under-resourced, students and teachers suffer and are set up for failure. In order to get schools out of CA2 and ensure the success of all of our schools, we as students demand that the school district take real corrective action. We've had enough of privatization and other reforms that have agendas other than educating students. We need the community to decide what happens to our schools. We need an equitable distribution of teachers, and we need more money for public schools. Youth organizing. Our schools have a number of problems, including a lack of resources, a lack of qualified teachers, and bad building conditions. Right now, students need to have a voice in education. We need to know what's going on in the system in order to fix it. If it is really our education, then we need to have a voice in it. Students are serious about being heard now. We will organize with students from across the district and our region and make the school district listen to us. We want to reclaim our education because not only are we the future, but we're the right now. Now that we have brought so many students together to make their voices heard, we're going to make sure that the changes we all expressed a strong desire to see happen. This summit was a major step in helping young people reclaim our education and get a voice in the issues that affect us.
Coming up in a few minutes, we have a segment about activists who are fighting for translators in Philly public schools. But first, let's hear some music.
they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are not. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand?
If you're just joining us, this is On Blast with the Philadelphia Student Union on WPEB 88.1 FM.
Now, we're going to hear a segment produced by Melina Vallis about parents who are organizing with Juntos to get more translators for South Philadelphia schools that have lots of immigrants, parents, and students.
Soy una madre de familia preocupada por la falta de comunicación entre padres y maestros.
I'm a mother concerned about the lack of communication between parents and teachers.
Siento que somos ignorados y pisoteados nuestros derechos como madre de familia.
And I feel like our rights as mothers have been stepped on and abused.
Este presente sistema siento que no funciona como debería funcionar.
I think the present system doesn't function as it should be.
Siento
I feel
que algunas veces hemos sido discriminados
we have been discriminated
de la escuela.
On the school.
Porque cuando tenemos reuniones,
when we have meetings,
no hay quien nos traduzca en nuestro idioma.
In our language.
Si nosotros contáramos con más intérpretes, sería de mucho beneficio.
If we had more interpreters, it would be a benefit for us.
Porque podríamos entendernos con los maestros y exponer los problemas y situaciones diarias que se dan con nuestros hijos.
You just heard Anastasia Lorenzo, Jovita Mendez, and Marta Lara giving testimony last April before the School Reform Commission of the Philadelphia School District. They all have children who go to Southwark Elementary School in South Philadelphia, and they've been working with other immigrant parents to advocate for more interpreters in Philadelphia public schools. An interpreter is a professional who works to bridge the barrier between people who speak different languages. In schools, interpreters help parents who speak little or no English talk to their children's teachers and understand what's going on at their children's school. I spoke with Irma Zamora, a member of Juntos, about her work organizing parents to advocate for themselves and to pressure the school district to provide more interpreters.
Estamos organizando a los papás porque actualmente hay un déficit aquí en el sur de Filadelfia en todas las escuelas que solo contamos con intérprete una vez.
We are organizing parents because right now there is a lack of interpreters in all of the schools here in South Philadelphia. We only have an interpreter once a week. This started about 3 years ago. Budget cuts started, and the lack of interpreters started in all the schools. Now we only have interpreters once a week in some schools. In other schools, we don't even have one interpreter. The Latino population is growing, and having interpreters is a necessity.
La población latina está creciendo. Es necesario que haya intérpretes.
Irma's daughter goes to Nebinger Elementary School, where 15% of students are in the English for Speakers of Other Languages program. At Southwark Elementary, 27% of students are in this program. This means that these students speak little or no English. Schools can find out easily how many of their students need language services, but because of the same lack of language access in the school, they often don't know the real number of parents who need interpreters.
Cuando uno llega a una escuela a inscribir a un hijo,
when you go to a school to register a child, the papers are all in English, so there's things you don't read. You might write down your name and address, but you forget to write down your native language.
Immigrant populations are growing in Philadelphia. According to the Philadelphia Immigration Project, 37% of the residents of the Greater Philadelphia region were born outside the U.S. That's up from 12% in 1990. The 2000 U.S. Census says that 1 in 5 Philadelphia residents speaks a language other than English at home. And because some immigrants are undocumented and don't show up on the census, the real numbers are probably higher.
Nos reunimos con el alcalde.
We met with the mayor, we met with the school reform commission, we met with representatives from the OLCA office.
Irma told me how Juntos parents had to educate the school district about the growth in the number of Latino immigrant families in South Philadelphia and about the real need for more interpreters.
Really, they didn't know that there was such a need here in South Philly, the need for interpreters. They had no idea what was happening here until we started to go talk to them and to show them statistics, to show them that, for example, if before it was 4% of the school population in South Philly, now it's 20 or 25%. And they didn't know what their job was supposed to be or how much of a need we had.
So what kinds of situations can happen when there is no interpreter available at a school?
Muchos de nosotros, cuando no tenemos intérpretes, usamos a nuestros hijos para interpretar.
When we don't have an interpreter, many of us use our children to interpret. So what happens is that when we're going to pick up report cards, if there's a C, we'll ask, why did my child get a C? And our kids won't say, well, it's because I didn't turn in a project, or because I don't pay attention to the teacher, or because I play in school, or anything else. The teachers say that, but obviously the children will change the story and say anything they can think of.
Pues muchos de nosotros pues nos conformamos, ¿no? Porque igual no le podemos contestar a las maestras.
And we have to make do with that because we can't respond to the teacher and the teacher can't respond to us.
Irma told me that parents sometimes don't find out when their child is skipping school.
Y eso está pasando mucho en la mayoría de los high schools.
And that's happening a lot in most high schools. There's a lot of truancy among Hispanic youth for the same reason. Because many parents aren't paying attention to what their children are doing, and the schools aren't committed enough to speak in their language or to send a letter home in Spanish to tell them, your child hasn't gone to school in 1 or 2 weeks. Unfortunately, they find out when it's already much too late. The city has already taken away some people's children for these reasons, because of not going to school or because of vandalism or something else.
However, the school district has shown some signs of wanting to address this problem.
The CEO, Cassandra Jones, said that she was going to create a new office of translation.
Every parent has the right to communicate with their children's school, no matter what language they speak.
Por ley, en las escuelas, nos tienen que hablar en nuestro idioma natal.
By law, in the schools, they have to speak to us in our native language. They have to help us with our language. They have to send us documents in our language. So we have that right, and we should exercise it.
This is Milena Velis, reporting for Labor Justice Radio.
And now, a headline.
A number of schools across the nation are now falling behind their standards set by the No Child Left Behind Act. The act, created in 2001, required that all students score proficient in reading and math on standardized tests by the year 2014. States were required to come up with the plans for how they would achieve that goal, including percentages that test scores would increase by each year. Many school officials have compared the problem to the current home loan crisis. Standards for improvement were set lower for the earlier years and higher in the later years. It was easier to meet the standards in earlier years, but recorded numbers of school districts are now falling behind because they are being asked to make huge, unrealistic gains. The reason that it was set up this way was because states expected that the standards would change when the bill was reauthorized last year, but efforts to change the law have been stalled.
This is the issue with No Child Left Behind. It puts huge pressures on schools to make unrealistic gains, doesn't fund school properly, and then punishes schools that can't make those gains. It is an unfunded mandate. The people that wrote No Child Left Behind were supporters of privatizing schools, and those schools that don't meet the standards are oftentimes offered up to be taken over by private companies. They designed No Child Left Behind to allow for large-scale selling off. They designed No Child Left Behind to allow for large-scale selling off of public schools in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a perfect example of this and was, in a lot of ways, the first and largest laboratory for privatization. We need to stand up as a community and say that we refuse to have our education put up for sale. If a school is struggling, like so many are, it needs reforms that come from the community it serves. Stay tuned for more on Blast after this song.
Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and make you want.
Now that I escape, sleep, walk, awake. Yeah. Those who come relate know the world ain't cake. Jail bars ain't golden gates. Those who fake, they break. When they meet their 400-pound mate, if I could rule the world, everyone would have a gun in the ghetto, of course. When get the up and on their horse. Kick around, drinking moonshine. I pour a sip on the concrete for the deceased, but no, don't weep. Why Clef's in a state of sleep, thinking about the robbery that I did last week. Money in the bag, banker look like a drag. I wanna play with pelicans from here to Baghdad. Gun blast, think fast, I think I'm hit. My girl pinched my hips to see if I still exist. I think not, I'll send a letter to my friends. A born again hooligan, only to be king again.
Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come. I play my enemies like a game of chess where I rest. No stress, stress if you don't smoke cess. Less, I must confess, my destiny's manifest. In some vortex and sweats, I make tracks like I'm homeless. Rap orgies with Borgie and Bess. Capture your bounty like Elliot Ness. Yes, bless you if you represent the fool. But I hex you with some witch's brew if you do do. Voodoo, I could do what you do. Easy. Believe me, frontin' niggas give me heebie-jeebies. So why you imitating Al Capone? I be Nina Simone and defecating on your microphone. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you. And take it slowly. You can't run away from these styles I got. Oh, baby, hey, baby, cause I got a lot. Oh, yeah. Anywhere you go, my whole crew gonna know. Oh, baby, hey, baby, you can't hide from the bag. Oh, no.
Ready or not, refugees taking over. The Buffalo Soldier, dreadlock roster. On the 12th hour, fly by in my bomber. Crews run for cover, now they under pushing up flowers. Super fly, true lies, do or die. Toss me high, only puff fly with my crew from Lakai. I, refugee from Guantanamo Bay. Dance around the border like I'm Cassius Clay.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide.
Nobody.
Gonna find you. Slowly.
You've been listening to On Blast with the Philadelphia Student Union. This is just a taste of what the student union does. We also do ongoing campaigns to improve our schools, monthly open mics, men's and women's groups, academic support, political education, and lots of other youth-led activities.
If you want more info about the Philadelphia Student Union, check out our website at www.phillystudentunion.org or email us at info@phillystudentunion.org. You should also find us on MySpace and Facebook. Send your comments and questions about the show to onblast@phillystudentunion.org. We love to hear from you.
Tune in next week, Sunday, from 2 to 3 p.m. for the next edition of On Blast with the Philadelphia Student Union. You can also listen to the show online by going to our podcast at onblast.podomatic.com. See you next time.